If you're like me, you may be looking around at contemporary pop culture and thinking, how did we get here? And by the way, I'm not talking about old fogey stuff like whether or not somebody's clothing styles match my taste. I mean, personally, I think that some of the things I've worn over the years should never be worn again, like leisure suits from the 70s come to mind. Now, what I'm talking about, though, are the massive cultural shifts being demanded from the far left and too often acquiesced to by an increasingly craven kind of corporate and political establishment. And by that, I also mean Republicans. For instance, when did it become okay to say that biological men can use the women's room in public spaces and we're just supposed to blithely accept that that's the way it is? The new normal, they call it. It is not normal. It's just not. Does it seem to any of you like there's been a sudden burst of this kind of cultural stupidity that we're in? As if the left suddenly found themselves as the cool kids on the block with all the belief that they can get away with everything. I mean, it's every day. And it seems to be happening with far more frequency and intensity. And I'm just glad that we're at a place where we're finally able to push back on it. Look, you can think of some of the examples we've dealt with over the past years and even some that are right now. Like, you know, remember back during COVID? Put your mask on, even though they don't necessarily work, according to multiple studies. But don't you dare ask questions. It's science. How about ivermectin? Remember ivermectin? That's horse dewormer. Medicine, silly people. You back off and obey the science because we're telling you that that's the science. Yeah, we're seeing different now, aren't we? How about those little boys that are actually little girls, regardless of what any doctor might say? Ignore the science. That's not the right science. A child can choose their gender. Meanwhile, you got a 6'4" male swimmer who competed in male swimming events at the Division I level for years. He's a woman now, they say. Don't talk to us about Title IX, silly people. That's just the law, and it's still science. Law's only applicable when we say it is. And then you look at the things they began to say to us about things like race. The things that we were opposed to, I thought, as a country. What do you mean you're not racist? You're white, aren't you? You have immediate privilege because of your skin color. Never mind you were raised in a poor single-parent household and had to work from the time you were 16. You're an oppressor. And then just the opposite to black kids. Young black children ought to know that regardless of the fact that they were born in the United States, that they are oppressed and victims merely by being born black in America because, you know, systemic racism and things. And yet the examples of just the opposite are everywhere. And then there was the climate change cult. Climate change, it's a matter of national security. Therefore, we must dedicate military resources and everything to saving the polar bears by instituting the National Defense Act and steering all military vehicles to green energy. Because, you know, fighting and winning our nation's wars is really not the first priority of the military, they said. And then there was always the thing about energy. I mean, pain at the gas pump. We had 40-year inflation. Nothing to do with the energy sector. Surely not. We're trying to it's for your good. You just stop that. It's science. Look, a couple of years ago, I watched a segment of a discussion between conservative commentator Matt Walsh and two transgender activists on the Dr. Phil show. And Walsh asked the trans activists the most fundamental question: how do you define a woman? And the first activist, who identifies as non-binary trans masculine, said he had no idea. And the other, the non-binary effeminate guy with the carefully groomed beard and the makeup, challenged Walsh to you define it yourself, which he did. In the same way that 99.99999% of the world does. The way we always have. In the biological and physiological sense, to which Walsh's opponent took issue, of course. In an attempt to blur the lines by questioning why somebody with no reproductive organs or other physiological female characteristics shouldn't be considered a woman. It's just an umbrella term, they said. Each person can define it differently. And Walsh calmly unhinged that disturbing attempt at rationale by saying, no, you simply want to appropriate womanhood and turn it into a costume that can be worn. It was masterful. But the whole dialogue, it was also sad in a pitiful sort of way, and a bit creepy, to be honest. At some point, I couldn't help thinking, Democrats are just sipping tea at the Mad Hatter's Tea Party right now. The left has literally taken the Democrat Party so far to the left that they don't even look like themselves anymore. Mad Hatter's Tea Party, you remember the Mad Hatter, right? That really weird character from Alice in Wonderland, and I'll be honest, I've always hated that book. As a kid, it used to creep me out. like one of those dreams that makes no sense and leaves you feeling unsettled even after you wake up. The Mad Hatter, he presided over a never-ending tea party, where he and all the others were trapped in limbo, asking each other unanswerable riddles and reciting nonsensical poetry, and it was hard to be around, and his obnoxious and inconceivable behavior eventually just drove Alice away. My analogy that Matt Walsh's debate with the two transgender activists, and really the progressive left in general, is like sipping tea with the Mad Hatter, it's right on point, man. It is. It was an example that modern society has allowed the Mad Hatter to set up a tea party right here in the middle of life as we know it. But I, for one, and I know a bunch of y'all, are not drinking the tea. We're not. So years ago, I actually worked in a treatment center for adolescents. And some of those kids came to us from a series of bad decisions. But some of them were helped to make those bad decisions along the way. Yeah. Parents would come to the family sessions that we would have. We'd work on setting rules and boundaries for little Johnny. Oh no, we would sometimes hear. We don't want to set rules and boundaries. It might drive him away. It might cause him to feel suppressed. Well, I got news. Some of those kids were in treatment because they were left to figure out life for themselves with no sense of right or wrong. And when nothing is black or white, then everything's gray. And when everything is gray, then you have to find your own truth. And that rarely works out well in the end. You see, here's the deal. It is okay to still have absolutes. There is no wrong in saying that things are actually wrong. And there's nothing right about calling wrong right or right wrong. Wait, yes, there is. You see, that's the thing. Liberals want you to believe that they can say whatever they want to say and it's just okay. Oprah wants us to all find our own truth, but when that happens, truth is lost. I'll never forget when Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister of England. She had a way of triumphing with words, you know? At one press conference, she was confronted by a reporter on whatever topic was being discussed at the time, and the reporter asked, "But madam, isn't that just the same old story?" To which she quickly replied, "Well, of course it's the same old story. The truth usually is the same old story." Well, progressives want us to believe that if we choose to take the position that something is true, then we are somehow denying someone else their own truth. That's a classic deflection. It's a circular argument. You cannot have your truth if it denies my truth. But the problem with that progressive rationale is that for something to stand as true, that means it cannot be controverted. It's either true or it's not. There's also, by the way, this fallacy that we must allow equal space within our own beliefs for other versions of truth. Sort of a laissez-faire approach to things like faith. You do you, I'll do me, and we'll all enjoy the tea party together. The problem is that never works. When one side demands of the other that truth should be considered relative and that if I don't share your truth that I'm somehow a threat. It reminds me of those bumper stickers that I see on some liberal cars out on the road. You've seen them, I know you have. Coexist, they say. Coexist, I think I've talked about them before. Coexist, all the symbols of the word coexist are symbols from a different world religion, all making up the letters. I got news, we already coexist. What they really mean is, you're a bigot if you don't give equal authority in your mind to other faith systems. Well, let me be clear. I'm aware that people want desperately for their versions of truth to be given some measure of credibility, even when they outwardly appear to defy logic or reason or science. It's not my place to condemn, and I don't. But there's a vast difference between not condemning and being told that I have to condone. A vast, vast difference. You see, here in the presence of God and witnesses, I feel free to say to you that the definition of a woman is one who is born with the physiological and biological and chromosomal makeup of, you guessed it, female. Likewise, the converse would be true for a man. And while we're at it, I'll go ahead and rock the boat a bit further and state unequivocally that life begins at the moment of conception. And within 8 days, that little mass of fetal tissue is circulating blood. And soon after that, you can detect a heartbeat. And yes, there is a strong evidence of response to stimuli even while the baby is in the womb. I'm also of the mind, parents ought to have the right to choose what's best for their child's education, or their child's medical care, or their child's psychological counseling. And for that matter, there should be parental consent for all of the above. And then there's the kicker, that evil should not be given more due than good, and that criminals should therefore be penalized in such a way that they are deterred from continuing crime, that police ought to be honored for their work, and that victims should never be forced against their will to sit down with their perpetrators and feel re-victimized in the process. Progressives want so badly for there to be no absolutes. A life in the gray space of progressive so-called truth. which in reality is like being stuck with Alice and the March Hare sipping tea and the Mad Hatter's perpetual tea party. I mean, it's kind of like we're stuck in an episode of The Hunger Games. Some alternate reality where right is wrong, wrong is right. I could go on and on, but yes, it does feel like there is some kind of liberal, multifaceted psychological operation going on against society today. And the Democrat Party has embraced it. Which I guess would mean either A, Democrats are liars and opportunists, or B, the Democrats themselves have gone crazy. I was reading in Acts chapter 4 recently. And I realized when I was reading it that, like King Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. Now, I realize some of you watching this may not be as fond of Scripture as I am. It might not be your belief system. That's fine. It's mine. That's your choice. But I do believe in the authenticity and the accuracy of the Bible. And I'll also tell you, scholars view the Bible as more than just a faith-based document. It's a historical record, too. It's a recounting of times and places and culture as much as any historical document. So given that the Bible is viable for its purely historical context, too, let's look at it for a minute, because in Acts chapter 4, there was a scene that's a lot like what I'm describing for you right now, about the Democrats and the progressive left being willing to defy what is really there. The religious leaders of the day in Acts chapter 4 thought that they had gotten rid of this whole Jesus thing, right? They had him crucified, but now the apostles were raising up thousands of new converts, teaching and preaching and performing miracles. Well, in Acts 3, the preceding chapter, we're told that Peter and John had just healed a man who was lame. He was a beggar who sat by one of the gates to the city every day. And suddenly, at the invoking of the name of Jesus, this lame man was walking around and the people were amazed, and that did not sit well with the leadership of the day. It didn't fit their narrative, if you know what I mean. You see where I'm going? It was not their chosen science. It was not their chosen faith. It was not what they wanted people to believe. It's one of my favorite passages of Scripture overall, but the part that gets me as I'm talking to you right now was it in Acts chapter 4 when the religious leaders had actually arrested Peter and John for simply healing a man, for healing a man outside of their selected narrative. Well, they were mad. They were embarrassed. They were the ones in charge, don't you understand? Who were these untrained and rabble to question the narrative of the leaders of society? Well, in Acts chapter 4:14, it says, the council could hardly discredit the healing when the man they had healed was standing right there beside them. Verse 15, so they sent them out of the council chamber and conferred among themselves and said, what shall we do with these men? And they asked each other, we can't deny they've done a tremendous miracle. Everybody in Jerusalem knows about it. But perhaps, they said, we can stop them from spreading the propaganda. And we'll tell them if they do it again, we'll really throw the book at them. So they called them back in and told them to never again speak in the name of Jesus. I'm quoting from the Message paraphrase of the Bible. But that's it. They literally said, we see it, we know it's real, everybody sees it, but we don't want that to be the narrative, so let's call them back in and just tell them to stop it. Do you hear that? 2,000 years ago, the leaders of the day felt threatened, much like what you see today, by the fact that truth was being presented and it didn't fit their talking points. 2,000 years ago, with a man standing on his feet right there in front of their eyes, a man who had been lame and everybody knew it, he was there, and they could not deny it. But he was there. So they still chose, though, even though they could see it with their own eyes, to shut the message down because it just didn't fit their agenda, their narrative, their science. And by the way, the answer that Peter gave them was spot on. And I'll paraphrase that for you, because Peter basically bowed up in Acts chapter 4. He squared off his shoulders. He looked at them and he said, you can think whatever you want, but I cannot stop speaking what I've seen and heard. Basically, Peter told him he wasn't playing their silly revisionist game. The man was walking. He was right there in front of everyone. Look, when the woke mob tells you to deny biology, or when the callous indifference of a self-appointed elite tells you to ignore what you see with your own eyes, when you're told that what is real is fake and what's fake is real, you tell them no. You tell them that they are free to believe what they believe if they want to, but that you are not going to stop speaking about the things that you know to be true. You're not going to be silenced. You're going to continue to speak the things that you've seen and heard. Truth is still truth, and truth wins out in the end. Having said all that, I said it a moment ago and I'll repeat it again. If the progressive left has so embraced the idea that truth is relative, and the Democrats are the party of the progressive left, then I would have to say that either Democrats are lying opportunists or they're crazy. Yeah, Democrats are in complete disarray right now on an epic scale. Gone are the halcyon days of hope and change. There's no grand figure in the party around which they can rally their base. They have no galvanizing message, no political rhythm, no mandate. All of which, by the way, is self-imposed. But I'm going to flip the script on you for a minute. Because what would have happened in Acts chapter 4 if Peter had just said, okay, we won't do it anymore? Or what if Peter had said, well, we'll try to calm it down a little bit. Maybe moderate the message so you don't feel quite so offended, but yet we can still do a little something on the side. No. Peter went and grew the church. The rock. The foundations and the underpinnings of what we call the church today. He didn't moderate. He didn't equivocate. He didn't step back. And what I'm saying right now in terms of the politics of today is that in the light of the Democrat left, the Democrat Party, being so absolutely bonkers, so crazy, that should be a warning to Republicans. The Greek philosopher Archilochus, he said, we don't rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training, meaning that those who fail to prepare in the off season will also fail to perform in the big game. Republicans would do well to remember that. There's no great political competition for the right side of the aisle right now. There's certainly bluster, obstruction, filibuster, mayhem, but rhetoric does not connote responsibility. And Democrats, obstruction does not equate to brinksmanship. Thank you very much. The danger here for Republicans, though, is laziness. Laziness due to a lack of competition. In the absence of true political opposition, Republicans can like slip back into their echo chambers, applaud themselves for their mediocrity. No fight, but they claim a victory. Year after year, session after session, speech after speech. Not even breaking a political sweat. They can just do enough to get by, write a congratulatory op-ed about themselves, send it out and slip off into their decaying piece of tepid insolence and let their political muscles just atrophy and their political will become flaccid. All because they have no real competition. And because in the absence of competition, they let themselves get calm and complacent. That can happen. And we can't do that. We can't. Because the Democrats are absolutely crazy right now. And there is absolutely no reason why a Republican elected official shouldn't be avidly pursuing everything they say they are in their campaign commercials. I can think right here in my own state. So in Alabama, where I'm sitting right now, the Alabama Democratic Party was the canary in the coal mine for the national level Democrats. The Democrat Party in Alabama lost ground big in 2010 in the Republican wave election that I was a part of. Alabama Democrats have only had one statewide office holder since that time. That's a one-term U.S. Senator Doug Jones. And by the way, that was an election that was marked with an asterisk. But Jones himself recently came out and said that the Alabama Democratic Party is a complete disaster, saying, and here's his quote. His quote was, "It's just an unmitigated disaster that has nowhere to go. They can't even get a quorum," he said, "to hold a meeting. And the reason they can't get a quorum to hold a meeting is because the leadership of the party," he said, "wants to do all these weird shenanigans." He's not wrong. He's labeling it. The Democrat Party is full of weird shenanigans. They've actually lost their minds. There's no real competition there for Republicans. On the national level now, Democrats have cascaded into a self-imposed chaos. Longtime Democrat strategist James Carville and the newcomer activist-turned-party leader David Hogg, they recently clashed over direction. Trading insults, ideas, the two de facto leaders of the left, they opined conversely that Democrats ought to either be replaced or just march on in the same fashion. Meanwhile, you got like Senator John Fetterman, the Democrat from Pennsylvania. He's facing attacks from the left because he dared to have more conservative views on some things. Democrat members of Congress are bum-rushing the gates of ICE detention facilities and may get arrested soon. Jasmine Crockett's verbal inanity embarrasses her colleagues on a regular basis, and then they're talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez being touted as a viable candidate for the office of president in 2028. Look, watching the Democrats shoot themselves in the proverbial foot on a near daily basis is the political version of the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. It's hyperactivity, it's riddles with no answer, it's poise without purpose. And if Republicans squander this moment in time, it will not be because the Democrats have their act together and put up a better fight. It'll be a loss that is solely borne by the team that had everything to lose. Donald Trump said in a recent interview with NBC News' Meet the Press, he said that being challenged is okay, it keeps you sharp. And I agree with that. The danger here for Republicans is the lack of challenge. Democrats have absolutely lost their minds. Democrats are crazy. But we cannot allow that complacency that comes from controlling our own destiny to somehow filter in and let us moderate our efforts. In the absence of challenge, Republicans have two choices. Two. You either get busy winning or you get busy slipping off into mediocrity. One of my favorite authors of all time is J. Oswald Sanders. He wrote a seminal classic called Spiritual Leadership. And it's a book that I have dog-eared and underlined and reread more than any other next to the Bible. In the 15th chapter, while talking about the fact that leadership can mean great exertion and long hours, Sanders said something that ought to be printed on bumper stickers and t-shirts and inspirational posters everywhere. He said this, if a person is, quote, not willing to rise early and work late, to expend greater effort and diligent study and faithful work, that person will not change a generation. Fatigue, he said, is the price of leadership. Mediocrity, he said, is the result of never getting tired. That, my friends, is not a mantra for what to do only when your competition is strong. That's a formula for success that is not driven by your competition. That's a formula for success that's driven by your sense of mission, by a time and place of calling, by a moment when it is yours to do and you know you're going to do it. Republicans right now have to move forward on the field of political battle, whether the opposition is crazy or not. Eric Cantona, I'll finish with this. Eric Cantona was a famed forward for the Manchester United Football Club, one of the greatest players to ever take the pitch. His philosophy was the same. He said, I don't play against a particular team. I play against the idea of losing. Because there's a difference. You see, if you play down to the other side, if you play down to the lesser competition, then you really wind up playing less of the quality that you're capable of playing. Republicans right now have to play to win. They must seize the moment and play to the idea of victory with an actual game plan. Anything less than that is mediocrity. Because right now, Democrats are absolutely crazy. That's my philosophy.